Welcome back to the Untitled Iffy, Drea, and Alonzo Project. I am the Drea of that equation. I am sitting in Iffy's seat in our virtual booth today because he is off doing fabulous things. He will be back shortly. However, I am delighted as ever to have my main man with the beard right here with me, Alonzo Duralde. What is good?
Oh, many things are good. Drea, I just want to say, I feel like I somehow missed the memo, the gay agenda bulletin board on this one. But there's a documentary series on FX called Pride, and it's also airing on Hulu. And it's amazing, and it's so informative, and I kind of go into most like kind of queer history things sort of thing. Well, I know all this stuff. I'm learning things I did not know about. It's really quite fascinating. Christine Vachon of Killer Films, indie film legend, has produced this thing. You know, the first two episodes, episode one is directed by Tom Kalin. Episode two, Andrew Ahn, who we're obviously big fans of here,
nice.
Director of Driveways. This is just a sharp, smart show, and it's really kind of packaging up contemporary queer history, like, you know, the first episode of the 50s, then the 60s, and it's going to go on from there. Really great. And I did not, I should have, in another time, I would have heard about this years ago and that it was coming down the pike and to look forward to it. And it just showed up one day and I'm like, okay. So anyway, it's really good. You should watch it.
You need to check the settings on your gay memos.
I think that might be
right?
It. I might have turned off notifications.
Yeah.
And then I've got to
That's
what
how you
else
find
I'm,
out everything.
Know, for
yeah.
Sure.
You want to make sure that's, and you're still in getting things down the pike. By the
for
way,
sure.
That phrase, you said it, and I was like, ooh, is that a, can we say that? Oh, yeah, we can say coming down the pike. It just sounded a little questionable to my ears for one sec. So I'm so delighted that today we have a special guest.
Yay.
Friend of the pod, has been here before, is perfect person to be discussing today's movie with and pretty much everything else. TV writer and comedian. She's written for The Simpsons, which is fitting because she's also the co-host of Maximum Fun's Round Springfield podcast. Julia Prescott.
Yay.
What's good?
Thank you so much for having me. Oh my
Yay.
God, what a treat to talk about movies and TV and amazing animated features with y'all. I'm so
Word.
Stoked. Oh.
What's good with you?
What's good with me? What is the pandemic minute up in my house? I don't know, things are good. You mentioned our Simpsons podcast. We are in the midst, Allie Gertz and I, of recording the last handful ever of our Simpsons podcast.
Wow.
And maybe subconsciously, we've stretched out this time of recording, partially because the scheduling of guests has been so difficult, partially because we don't want it to leave. Maybe a little column A, column B. But you could look forward to that on Maximum Fun. And yeah, just other writing stuff. And oh, I just moved. So that's another thing that's good.
Oh, nice.
Like we all did. Thank you so much. My husband and I are homeowners, which is crazy.
Ooh,
wild.
Wow.
Yeah. I moved 6 minutes drive away from my mom and immediately was like, don't make me regret this. But I'm really happy. Like
work
I'm close
on those
with
boundaries.
My mom. Yeah. But she knows she's only come over unannounced once, which I think is real restraint. So yeah.
In how long?
Well, actually, it's only been a couple months, but you know, if the listeners care, I can give a mom update from time to time. I'll just, you know, go days without incident. You'll know that's what I
nice.
Mean.
Nice. Yes.
Fair enough.
Nice.
I'll
just don't
it.
Let your mom know the incident is her visiting unannounced.
Yeah.
Drea, what's good?
Oh, well, thank you, Alonzo. And this time you didn't even have to cut me off because I couldn't ask myself that.
No, you did not.
What's good with me is also TV related, though, based on what Alonzo said, a little more shameful. But what is good with me is MTV's The Challenge, which is one of my longtime favorite reality shows. I don't watch a ton of reality shows, and I tend to prefer ones that are like people being good at something, your Project
yeah.
Runways or your Top Chefs or whatever. The Challenge is bonkers because it's, you know, it's been around for like literally 20 years and it is a reality show that has like big physical competitions, but then also has that environment of all these people living together. What sets it apart is most of the people in the house have now also known each other for years and years. They have lingering resentments. They've all slept with each other's partners. They have stuff that happens in real life that gets referenced back on the show. So there's such a rich, dramatic backstory for all of these that you're not going to get if you're just casting, you know, 20 super fit, hot people. These are like 20 super fit, hot people with a lot of like like grudges.
That's amazing. And
I love it. They're on Paramount Plus. I've been rewatching old ones. There's an All Stars that's currently out with a bunch of like the people from my like from like however many years ago. But then again, some of them are still competing now. So who knows?
Is this the show that used to be the Real World Road Rules Challenge?
That's what I was going to ask you. I used to watch that too. Okay. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And those are the ones I'm rewatching. Gotcha. And so it used to be entirely a pipeline through people who had been cast members of the Real World or Road Rules, and then after a certain point, they're cranking out so many of the challenge and so less seasons of the Real World that they had to start augmenting with, like in the past few years, they have like people from Big Brother, people from Love Island UK. There's a bunch of just
a murderer's row of top shelf
you're
challengers.
Holding up for the 90 Day Fiance challenge, right?
Super fit dum-dums from all over the world, and I love them. Yes.
That's so amazing. Yeah. I need to hop over to that. My husband and I were deep in the pit for The Bachelor and Bachelorette and Bachelor in Paradise franchise. And so in just a couple weeks, we are about to embark on another journey for love, and I cannot wait. But I'm also minutes ago, I was in front of my TV, happy as a clam, watching the latest episode of Real Housewives of New York. So I'm deep in that pit too. I'm a Real Housewives New York, Real Housewives Beverly Hills person. I don't fuck with any other shows or cities. I found my two polar opposites on the coasts, and I don't need to know.
Yeah,
better
Hills,
than being
York,
a completist, because that's
end
a lot
of list.
To deal with.
Nothing else happened after that.
We let Paramount Plus die, but not before we went back and revisited the Andy Warhol episode of The Love Boat.
Oh,
of course
yeah.
you did.
Which is a thing that happened.
I'm going to balance out my challenge with some Andy Warhol Love Boat.
There you go.
Just to like keep a little artistry to it. All right. Speaking of artistry, today we're discussing The Mitchells versus The Machines. We're going to answer a call from our hotline. And as always, we will end with staff picks. But kicking us off, it is our news segment, It a Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a news segment and answer the question, Is This Important? Do I Care? We're going to begin with the passing of one of my fantasy boyfriends, Charles Grodin, phenomenally deadpanned actor, a beautiful description from our producer, Casey. He passed away earlier this week at the age of 86. You might remember him for lead roles in comedies like Midnight Run and The Heartbreak Kid, but he also worked extensively in kids' movies like Beethoven and The Great Muppet Caper. Is this important? Do you care?
Oh, boy howdy, yes. He was something of a kind of a staple of, it's weird, like when people talk about it, he's a staple of my childhood, he was in Beethoven. No, he was a staple of my childhood because he was in Catch 22, you know,
he was a staple of my childhood because he was in So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Fair enough. I see the generations at work here, but yeah, like in that he was one of those sort of like wonderfully neurotic 1970s character actors who would just pop up randomly and stuff and always be really funny. And he was somebody that I always dug because generally his, you know, the things that he was in were sort of adult and sophisticated before doing like the kids things later on. But yeah, he was a very kind of one of a kind performer in that you could plug him into something like Midnight Run, and while De Niro is being De Niro, Grodin is seemingly doing nothing and like walking away with every scene, you know.
Yeah.
I was sad that like the later part of his career, he did that whole talk show period where he seemed to lose his sense of humor about things. I think there's something about talk shows where if you're not the right fit for it, it just becomes really disastrous. Like see Chase, Chevy. But yeah, I think as a performer, Grodin was extraordinary.
Yeah, it was kind of chilling timing too, because so my, as I like to say, pandemic lifeboat. You know how when the pandemic started, whoever we were nearest, we were in a lifeboat together and joined a group chat. And that's just who you socialized with the entire pandemic. And I love these people, but they're my pandemic lifeboat. We have a movie night every Sunday where we watch usually a movie that we can riff on. And we had literally just watched Clifford and basked in the glow of Clifford, and you know, we're just lighting up the text chain of like, what happened to him? What's going on? And we knew about the talk show, of course, but like, we were kind of dancing around the topic, like, oh, I hope, is he a right-wingy guy now? And then this news broke, and it just was like this really weird timing of us, you know, honoring him with Clifford.
he is not. That. He was not a right-wingy guy. There's a beautiful clip of him calling Sean Hannity a fascist, which I highly recommend you look out for, because that's the kind of thing that brings me joy. Charles Grodin was someone who, he was such a interesting leading man, because I'm someone who, like, that is my flavor. That might be my flavor because of Charles Grodin. Like, it's a real chicken or the egg situation. Like, some very formative Great Muppet Caper moments for this girl. Like, all I've wanted my whole life is for someone to look at me like Charles Grodin looks at Miss Piggy. But then also all I've wanted my whole life is to not be looked at like how Charles Grodin looks at Robert De Niro in, like, Midnight Run. So he was such an accomplished and interesting, unique actor. Like, he had such a texture and such an energy, but he made it that in a leading man capacity rather than a supporting character, which I find a kind of unique trajectory. But he did so much. I never saw his show that he hosted, the talk show stuff, but I will say, if you go back, like, and you watch him giving Johnny Carson or David Letterman hell, yes, please. There's something about, he was someone who had that, like, Andy Kaufman comfort with uncomfortability, and would, like, push things, like, just
extend
far
the
enough.
Silence.
Yes, like, he would own a bit as far as he could, and I just think he was such a consummate performer and wonderful, and I hope his family enjoyed all their time with him, and I hope he had a rich, wonderful imagining of his own life. And I also think it's important to remember, many people saw this, but it's always fascinating to think about how he was offered the lead role in The Graduate and he turned it down because it didn't pay enough. And he's honestly the only person who could have played that character other than Dustin Hoffman. So.
Wow, I didn't know that. All right. That's amazing.
To you, Charles Grodin.
I highly recommend, if you have not seen them, The Heartbreak Kid and Albert Brooks's Real Life. Two great
performances. Any Albert Brooks, though.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, of course. There's a new trailer out, and I have not seen it because I try not to watch them, but the Dear Evan Hansen trailer dropped this week. It is the screen adaptation of the Tony-winning Broadway musical about an awkward teen who has a therapeutic self-intended letter stolen by a classmate who later dies by suicide, and whose family then mistakes it for having been sent to Evan by their son, Ben Platt, who is now 27 years old, reprises his role as the lead teen. Is this important? Do you care?
Yes,
I do. Yeah, I'm someone who I love Ben Platt and think he has a beautiful voice and is so talented. But I watched this and was like, why is that 40-year-old man?
Yeah,
it looked as
what's up, fellow young people?
Yes, it looked similar. It looked as out of place as, like, a lot of people have mentioned Pen 15.
Yes,
the idea of those girls That's playing hilarious. Like middle schoolers. So I'm not familiar with Dear Evan Hansen, largely because when I first heard about, I've heard some songs from it and loved them. Mm-hmm. And when I first heard about it, someone gave me the pitch and I was like, that sounds horrible. Like, it made me so uncomfortable what it was about. And then I watched the trailer because I knew we were discussing it today. And I was like, God, I hope we don't do this movie on this podcast, because I have... Remember the uncomfortableness that I was saying Charles Grodin likes living in? I do not. Like, I was so uncomfortable watching it, because the whole thing is this, like, teen with high anxiety lying about something that is so...
And becoming centered in another family's tragedy.
Yes, it seems so icky.
The elevator pitch for this movie can go south a million different ways.
Yes. So, yes. Julie, have you seen it? Are you familiar with it?
I have a lot of different layers, a tiramisu of feelings, if you will, on the topic of Dear Evan Hansen. So,
start with the cocoa powder and work your way down.
I'm going to start with the cocoa powder. I'm a musical theater loving, gotta sing, gotta dance. Listen, I'm from the San Fernando Valley. Every other school you go to and all the schools I went to are performing arts magnets. Okay, so we got that out. I am often the person in my marriage to pull the partner to go see musical theater. My husband is, he does not like singing and dancing usually. And with Dear Evan Hansen, just seeing the pandemonium that was occurring, the fandom of back in Broadway when it was on and everybody just losing their mind. And it became something that we felt was like only appealing to tweens. And so even with my Gotta Sing, Gotta Dance, I walked in very skeptically. And we even made fun of like, oh, what are the songs going to be? Dear Evan Hansen. Just like being jerks. Walking it, just hating it, just being jerks. 5 minutes in, I'm weeping. I cannot talk. One time I was listening to the soundtrack after we'd seen it, and the main song came on, and I turned to my husband. I just tried to describe to him what the song meant to me, like how it felt, and I started crying again. It is something so infectious. Okay. I cannot.
Wow.
And I cry. Listen, I cry at every single live performance I see, because especially when people are harmonizing, there's something that happens in my lizard brain that makes me go, oh, it's time for Niagara Falls. There is something that is so poignant about not only the story of this show and the way that they present it. The trailer doesn't do it justice, though I understand people having gripes with the trailer because the trailer assumes you know the show. You do not know the show, a friend of mine on Instagram was like, so it was a suicide note switcheroo? Do I have that right? And I was like, I said, actually, it's not. It was not an unintended suicide note from Evan Hansen. Anyway, it is something that you need to have experienced it in that way, unfortunately. But then having seen it, like, I don't know. I was saying the poignancy of like the story of this show matched with the heartache and hardships of even mounting a Broadway show in this modern world, period, is something that was really resonant to me. And even though this is also a show that is about the internet in a very big way, it's about being viral for the wrong reasons, etc. They present it in a way that was really fresh, I felt, and really true and earned to the story. Into the characters, and at least the person I saw portraying Evan Hansen in the touring company did it with such vulnerability and rawness that you really can't fake. And I'm sure that Ben Platt presents his performance of it in the same way. So I think that people are going to be clowning on this Evan Hansen movie now, but when they see it, they maybe not have as full of a weeping experience as I did when I saw it, but will be moved.
I cry at everything. You've talked me into it. My thing was more, do they have an awareness that there's a potential ick of whatever it is? But also, that's unfair of me. We make fun all the time of people who judge trailers like they know the whole movie. How dare I? Casey, I will watch this if we decide to do it. Well, I take back my own dumbness.
Movies that are the movie adaptation of a Broadway musical are just always going to be hard. And I think that the flip is also hard, but in a different way. The flip, when you go from a movie adaptation to a stage adaptation, there's a cheapness that kind of seeps through every crevice. But I think that flipped, when it's the musical to a movie, there's always just going to be this added layer of you had to be there. But if you do a good job,
but
hopefully it bridges
the
divide.
Rent anyone?
Yeah. As much
don't get me started on Rent.
Yeah. I can make fun of Ben Platt looking older for this, but also he did originate this role. He workshopped it for years. He did all sorts of things. So I'm sure I would be equally bitchy about if they'd had someone else play it when you're like, that guy is right there.
He deserves the chance to preserve it in amber or whatever.
Yeah. Can I tell you my favorite thing about Dear Evan Hansen that I've learned in my research the last 24 hours? All like the four main guys who played Evan Hansen are all dating each other, which I love so much. So Ben Platt dates Noah Galvin, who followed him on Broadway. And then the guy who followed him, Taylor Trench, is dating Ben Levi Ross, who was the U.S. tour Evan Hansen. I mean, now this that fact me. Alone should like bring you
That's
into it.
That's the most lesbian thing I've ever heard
about. That is
life.
The it most lesbian is. Thing. Wow. Holy
but it
shit.
Also balanced out. Yeah, I was genuinely shocked when I watched the trailer to realize there was not a gay storyline. I was like, I assumed Dear Evan Hansen would be gay in some way. And I know it is, but it is all
just
behind
backstage.
The scenes. Yeah, exactly.
Wow. That I'm so glad I know that now. There's something yes. like weirdly narcissistic about that. I mean, not weirdly. It's blatantly narcissistic.
Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, gay guy. There is a breed of gay guy who dates a dude who looks just like him. But to date your own understudy, essentially. That seems...
To date someone who sings in your same register. I mean, that's another
yeah,
step.
Yeah, I mean, do they put the costume on and pretend to do the mirror routine?
Oh,
like,
oh don't
they have
ruin
to train
it.
Somehow.
I do need to know if Julia had either one of these two t-shirts, either the one that said gotta dance or the one that said I can't, I have rehearsal.
No, but I did have like a shitty limited two shirt that said I'm with the band.
Yes.
And
nice.
I also had my mom's old vintage Chorus Line shirts and shit like that I would
oh.
wear. So that basically is the same.
Yes. Same dip.
We'll count it.
Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking about the Mitchells versus the Machines.
Hey, you guys, we'll be back to the show in a minute. But first, we wanted to share a word from our good friends at BetterHelp. It's 2021, and it's finally okay to talk about our mental health. And that's why we're excited to be sponsored by BetterHelp. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions. They'll match you with a therapist in under 48 hours, and it's easy to change therapists if needed. Remember, you don't need a traumatic event to benefit from therapy. Maybe you're feeling anxious or depressed, or your stress feels like it's too much to manage. Get some tools to cope and make life just a little bit easier.
I think that's a good point, the idea of not needing a traumatic event to get therapy or to benefit from it. I think so many people imagine like, oh, you know, I would go to therapy, but I haven't really had any obstacles worth it, or I haven't been hurt in particular ways. And the reality is the last year we lived through as a planet
yes.
counts as a traumatic event. And even if we hadn't had that, oh, wouldn't that be the dream? But even if we hadn't had that, there are plenty of small things that build up and can feel very huge to you. And that is fine. And I think addressing them is more than fine. And, you know, I think we're all proponents of like lead the best life you can. And a lot of that means taking care of yourself and thinking that it's okay to value your mental health and how you're looking at things, and getting a hand up with that, with a professional guiding you and asking you questions and pointing you in helpful directions, is you are worth that. We want that for you.
Absolutely. Plus, BetterHelp is way more affordable than in-person therapy. See if it's for you. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and the Untitled Iffy Dre and Alonzo Project listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/whoshot. Yes, I know. It's the code for the old show. We're just going to go with it. That's betterhelp.com/whoshot.
We have wasted this world. Our magic put a storm in the sky that has rendered the surface of our planet uninhabitable. But beneath the surface, well, that's another story entirely. In a city built leagues below the apocalypse, survivors of the storm forge paths through a strange new world. Some seek salvation for their homeland above. Others seek to chart the vast undersea expanse outside the city's walls. And others still seek, what else? Fortune and glory. Dive into the Aether Sea, the latest campaign from the Adventure Zone, every other Thursday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to the Untitled Iffy, Drea, and Alonzo Project. I am your host, Drea Clark. In the studio, virtually with me are...
Alonzo Duralde.
Julia Prescott.
Okay, buddies, today we are talking about the Mitchells versus the Machines. I'm so excited. I'm on the edge of every seat that I have. And before we dig in, Alonzo, I know you want to give us a brief synopsis, guy. I know you do.
Sure, why not? So, meet Katie Mitchell. She is a college-bound high school senior who is obsessed with movie making, mostly movies that star her incredible dog. And whether or not her dog is a dog is something that will come up later. Anyway, so she applies to college in California. She's very excited about going for partially just to kind of distance herself from her dad, Rick, with whom she's had a bit of a contentious father-daughter, teenager, awkward relationship. Rick feels like that this is his sort of last chance to really bond with her. So he tells her that instead of flying, the whole family's going to have a road trip cross country. Well, this road trip happens to coincide with a Silicon Valley genius coming up with an AI system, which unfortunately his other AI system takes over and has robots capturing all of mankind to ship them off into space. The only hope left for mankind, the Mitchells, their station wagon, and the dog.
Oh, that was a good one. You really knocked it out of the park with that one, Alonzo.
Yeah, you hit all the boxes.
Solid synopsising. this film, I'm delighted to talk about. There's so many different fun angles on it. One thing that I think is both very sort of low-key, but also non-apologetic and just woven in from the beginning is the idea that we're introduced to Katie as a young queer teen. And we get that primarily through cues, but not in a way that I found sort of hidden like a lot of films do. It did. She outright has a crush on a girl in her program. She can't wait to get there. We have a lot of rainbow imagery. She has a sort of pride pin on her all the time. And, you know, she just has the exciting asymmetrical hair of a young burgeoning queer, which I appreciate. Are you guys, when you met Katie and you saw, you know, if you knew or didn't know that that angle was going to come in, have you seen that in family films like this? Like, this is an animated family film, and our lead kid is a sweet little gaby.
I haven't seen it in the way that it was treated in this film. It's either done with such a bold face underscore, aren't we diverse? Look at us go. Or it is, like you said, so like blink and you miss it that it felt more like servicing a note than actually giving a shit about who this character is and making them a real person. Like,
or it's the last minute of Paranorman.
Oh, God. I didn't even remember that. Yeah, that's a great example.
Which also could be the category of like blink and you miss it. Here's the studio note. Aren't you happy? Let's go to lunch. So,
well, I think what this often boils down to, like, it certainly was specifically the case with the lesbian cop in Onward and a few other characters that have popped into animated films along the years, is that show me one that you can't dub out in China. You know, or in other countries where, like, they're really skittish about LGBTQ representation, in Russia, you know, wherever else. And so, you know, I think a lot of times we see these characters where, like, I think in Russia specifically, the Onward character got redubbed to be no longer a lesbian. Here's how old Grandpa Alonzo is and how completely not expecting to see queer content in a family film, I completely missed it. All of it. I found out later
people
talking about this queer character, Mitchell vs. Machines. I'm like, really? Which one? I didn't like.
Alonzo.
I saw the rainbows. I saw that she was like excited about meeting.
That's them doing their job better.
I guess so, but like, I'm not blaming the movie for any of this. I'm just dense, and I just I have lived a life of being ignored and erased by the media. So I was just not ready for Katie Mitchell to be as queer as she is, and going back and looking at it, I'm like, oh well, yes, of course, dummy. But I just it all went right past my big gay head.
That's fascinating for all of the different perspectives I thought you were going to take. I did not see that one coming. So thank you. I've earned sitting on the edge of the seat. For me, I loved, you know, they introduced Katie and they, you know, she's a high school senior. She's getting ready to leave. That is the fic of, as someone who was a girl high school senior, and the clashes with your parents, even in the most benign way, which really hers are. Like, she has a safe and loving home where she's accepted and adored. So her clashes are much more of the sort of suburban type than mine were, of like, you just don't get me. And it's because, like, they got the wrong kind of soda or something. Like, what? You know, I don't eat ham. Like, just dumb stuff. And for her, things like how it's a first set up is this idea of saying to, you know, she alludes to her conflict with the father of, there was something, you know, like at a certain point, he just stopped understanding me. And then it goes to her as a freeze frame and like shoots off these rainbows behind her. And it was this small thing, because to me, unless you're Alonzo, if you're a young gay kid and you're watching it, like there might be such a moment of, oh, that was me. And that if you're me and you're watching it, there's still a, oh, parts of this ring true and parts fit for me. Like it's an embracing way to take that on. And I also really liked that it's such a fine line of wanting it to be a through line that can't be edited out or dubbed over, but right. Also it doesn't make sense. There's plenty of gay stories about coming out, and those are often really traumatic and dark. And there was something more like, oh no, this is just an animated family movie and our lead character is queer and that's just part of it. And so the idea of like, you know, the mom is like, oh, aren't you going to see that girl? Like, it's the same level of interest they would have if sure. She had talked about a boy that she wanted to meet. You know what I mean?
And that's not the sole source of conflict between truth. Her and the dad. You know,
yeah.
I think, and I think even if you completely see all this stuff as it's coming, the movie never shapes it out to be like, dad can't deal with the fact that she's a lesbian. You know, like it's so much other stuff, and that we get to understand that conflict from both sides and see why they act the way they act and what the way through it is for them to sort of like come to an understanding of each other is one of the many gorgeous things this movie does with such aplomb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this movie is it's fully about them being outsiders. Like her whole thing is she keeps talking about at the beginning of how like she was so excited to finally find her people, right? Like
yeah.
She's this young girl. She's loves weird movies. She wants to be a movie maker. Like no one knows what she's talking about all the time. But then when they pull back and you see the whole family, there's a comparison there too, right? Of like, oh, we're just the oddball family. We're
yeah.
not. And they do, like, you know, Julia had mentioned this, but there's a really interesting thing, a couple of ways they're commenting on social media in this. And, you know, they have the neighbors they compare themselves to who are right. voiced by John Legend and Chrissy Teigen.
I didn't know that until the very end. And I was like, oh my God.
It's so small and perfect. And then also that this is a movie about their versus the machines. It's the singularity. Like
yeah.
there's this AI come to life. And what does that mean in terms of, mm-hmm. you know, they integrate that the whole time of people on their screens or they all have their phones. And it's doing so much commentary, but it is like it is so lightly handled.
Yeah.
Well, what I love is that it would have been very easy to just do a Jeremiah of, oh, you kids, put your damn phones down and live. But like the screens save everybody
yes.
at the end, you know? So like it's not just being this sort of hectoring scold about like, oh, you know, you're not looking at the world. It's like it acknowledges that, yes, we need to stop staring at goddamn screens all day. And that we're actually, the fact of screens, the fact of handheld digital capability is why somebody like Katie Mitchell can become a filmmaker already in high school
yes.
because she can shoot shit on her phone and edit it on her laptop. And like the tools have been democratized in this way. And the movie is acknowledging that while at the same time acknowledging that we can go too far in our sort of reliance upon those tools.
Yeah. Right. And I think that assessment alone is probably part of the reason why I was a fan of this movie, just in hearing about it from Lord and Miller when it was called Connected. And then, and they were working on it during the pandemic and it changed somewhere between being called Connected to the Mitchells versus the Machines, which I think was a right choice. But I think that that also probably was, you know, factored into what you're saying, Alonzo, of that it's less about like put your phones away, phones are the devil, and having that just be this oversimplified argument, which just makes the previous generation look even more like cranky and old. And it's more about what can these screens actually afford, and that there's more nuance to it than that. I mean, this movie personally hits so many different boxes for me. Like, I told my mom, who I don't think has seen it yet, I keep telling her to watch it because I feel like, you know, I was Katie. I'm straight, but I was Katie when I was going into school. I spent my freshman year of college going to California College of the Arts in the Bay Area, where I double majored in film and photography because I was basically making my own cinematography major. I made films all the time on my little mini DV camera and, you know, was like, would stay up all nighters for nothing just to finish editing something that turned out to be really bad, but it didn't matter. You know, I just was constantly fiddling around in a time really before the internet was really taking speed in a way that serves Gen Z right now. But I related to that part so much. And I felt like the, you know, human story of the family and them all being part of this unit and having that having value as well as the chosen family that you inherit when you go to college were kind of given equal billing in a way that I don't see often, especially in family entertainment. And then also having worked a lot in family entertainment, kids entertainment, you know, it is so rare to have something feel so realized and so, you know, like the human touch to it is so strong versus it being this like copy of a copy of a copy of like, I don't know, this is a flip-flop who talks, go at it, you know?
Yeah.
It felt so genuine, which is also part of the reason why, you know, Lord and Miller, I say that they're my favorite storytellers right now. I've been a huge fan of theirs and since Clone High and of, you know, when they did the Lego movie, it completely blew my mind because they truly did the impossible. Making a movie that slaps as hard as that movie slaps out of Legos. All respect to Legos. I've worked for Lego. All respect for them. But you know, and it's them paired with these two Gravity Falls writers who just like knocked it out of the park. I just was so beyond proud and thrilled and inspired to create my own within that same style.
I think the other thing that really stood out to me with this, and it's something that I felt with the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse as well, which that they were also produced. The idea that for a gargantuan budget, I could imagine seeing this live action. I could see these were people. I could see this family. Like, there's something about animation. If you're not someone who doesn't watch a lot of it, especially like this is a family movie, but I think there's often that distancing between like, oh, I don't really want, I, you know, there's, if people I find can be as adverse to it as they are to like subtitled films. Mm-hmm. And for something like this, like what you're losing from that, because these are such human performances and that there's attention given to all of, like the mom who's voiced by Maya Rudolph, you know, this is a father-daughter story in so many ways. And yet the mother still has this beautiful full arc and a self-actualization and an involvement with her kid's life and an impact in the story. And that, you know, to take that attention and give it to every single character, you know, we watch so many things drop the ball on that, but something that's going to take this long in putting together is even more impressive to me.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you brought that up because that is a conversation that I have all the time as a writer who works mainly in animation, and I married an animator, so it's just it's in the house. But you know, the conversation of, and especially this is always highlighted, King of the Hill. Why is King of the Hill animated? There is absolutely nothing story-wise, character-wise that requires the animation, you know, compared, of course, to The Simpsons, which there was an internal mandate for always having a moment in every episode that justified the animation. But I think that the reason why King of the Hill is animated and this weird, ironic twist of what happens when you have a story that is animated is that you actually bring forth more humanity to the characters. And it not only allows the suspension of disbelief, but it allows you to have sympathy for characters that you might otherwise not have. And it's going to be more of an uphill battle for that. So in that way, you get villains that are going to be a little bit more delicious to follow and a little bit more sympathetic but you also get main characters who garner that sympathy in a way that I don't think that you can easily get in a live action movie. It's a different set of stakes that are at play. But if you want to do something that has a little bit more heart and nestles into your grooves in that way as a viewer, then I think that animation can be really powerful in that way. And that's definitely what I found in this movie.
That is a very good way to look at it.
I'm defending my paycheck.
All right, so let's get into our final reviews for The Mitchells versus the Machines. Will we snap it up on physical media, stream it, or skip it? Alonzo, why don't you start? I'll switch it. You can show Julia how we do.
Okay. I would absolutely snap this up on physical media. This is one I would want to have for the library. It is at the moment, you know, streaming on Netflix, although it did have, I think, a week-long theatrical run before then. If it is still in theaters now, I would trek out and see it again on the big screen. I would really like to have that experience. But yes, absolutely, I give it our highest rating. It's dynamite.
I would snap it up too. I'm just going to jump in. I would
get snap in there, Julia.
The fuck out of it. And I looked everywhere for it to be in theaters, and I'm still looking. Maybe when the Alamo Drafthouse reopens, they'll have it. Or I'll just keep staring at my AMC app and go, is today the day I see Raya? I'm not sure it is. But I absolutely loved it. And not only that, you know, it just being a really great execution of a really strong story with really strong characters, but the style of animation, y'all. Oh, my God. Yeah. This is me marrying an animator talking, probably. But and I think also, like, taking a cue from what they did with Spider-Verse, the backgrounds are a different texture than the foreground characters, but they both match and they're both super detailed and realized in a way that just is not lazy in any way you cut it. I'm so glad when people show up to work. I'm so appreciative.
So true. There's also animation within animation, because we see Katie's, like, flourishes of how she sees the world, and somehow it comes across like you're looking at animation on a real screen, but it's on an animated. It's so good. So there, I sort of gave away my answer. I'm also a snap it up. This movie is so special and fun and warm and delightful. I also cried, but you guys know I love to cry at movies, so that is a bonus in my estimation. Yes, so glad we got to talk about such a charming film. Now, we will be right back after we hear from another show on Maximum Fun.
The 2021 pin sale has begun. Thank you so much to everyone who participated in the Max Fun Drive. This is the last year for a while that we'll be doing pins for Max Fun Drive, and the fifth year that we'll be selling pins and donating all proceeds to charity. The past year proved what we already knew, that having access to the internet at home is a necessity for work, school, healthcare, and keeping in touch with family and friends. So the proceeds from this year's pin sale will go towards Everyone On, a nonprofit working to bridge the digital divide. We're grateful that with your support, we'll be able to help low-income folks gain access to affordable computers, internet services, and digital literacy programs. The sale will run until May 28th. Folks at the $10 monthly level and above will have access to all of the pins from the drive. That's 38 pins, one from every show on the network. We also have a special 2021 Max Fun Drive pin that all members can purchase. Go to MaximumFun.org/pinsale for more info. And to learn more about Everyone On and support them directly, you can go to EveryoneOn.org.
Welcome back once again to the Untitled Iffy, Drea, and Alonzo Project. I remain Drea Clark, and in the studio with me are...
Alonzo Duralde.
Julie Prescott.
All right. Yeah, Julia Prescott's right over here.
Right over here.
All right, now
call
it's time
the
to
square
hear
dance.
Call. Yes. Grab your partner round and round. Now it's time to hear... If I was Iffy, I would have finished that as a whole couplet. But I am not a professional comedian, so I'm just going to ask Casey to play the call from our hotline.
Hello. Thank you all so much for getting us through this. Not just this, but even before this. But my question is, when the pandemic is somewhat past us, what movie would you all like to see in the theater and why? And it can be any movie recent or old or whatnot. Mine would be How to Train Your Dragon, because my son was born March 5th, the weekend the pandemic started. He was born on a Saturday morning, and the pandemic and the lockdown officially happened shortly right after that. So literally within that weekend of being at the hospital. And he loves that movie. He just turned one, and he loves it. And I would love to see him in the theater with it, just having the time of his life. He's a pandemic baby, and he's had it twice in less than 4 months. But everybody's okay, and we're grateful. But, you know, that and him and you guys and a lot of other great things have been getting us through a lot of tough times, and we really appreciate it. Love you all.
Well, thank you. Hope everybody's hanging in there.
I just started crying. I just told you how much I cry, and it's delighted. That was so nice. I don't think he said his name, but thank you for that, and congratulations on your son
baby.
And the great work you're clearly doing as a dad, caring so much. I kind of now want to watch How to Train Your Dragon in honor of you and your little baby.
Yeah.
This is an interesting question because, and we say this like knowing like everyone who listens to this is going to be at different points of where and when theaters will be open, where and when they'll feel comfortable in theaters. But I like it as a larger experiment of, it, as like that thing of focusing on what we can dream for, of like, ooh, the fantasy, the theaters are open and I get to watch whatever I want on the big screen.
I think from the last year alone, there are a lot of films that we saw on under lockdown that I think I would love to have the chance to see again projected. Raya actually being one of them.
Really?
I really liked Raya and the Last Dragon. Yeah, it's terrific.
I haven't seen it.
it is really good. Mitchell's versus the Machines, Barb and Star. Like, I think there have been quite a few films that I just thought were really terrific that you know, I would love to see all of Small Axe projected. You know, I
mean, just
a lot of different stuff that I watched for film festivals or whatever. But I mean, my real answer, actually, it happened this week. I got to see F9 on the big screen. Because
so fun.
Once that got taken off the schedule last year, I think for a lot of people, if you like those movies, it became the one you wanted to go back and see in a theater. And certainly we went back last year and revisited the first 8 and
They're
watched
so
them
good.
Again
this is the, yeah,
on
this
the
is
small
the Fast
screen.
And Furious franchise. Obviously, if you listen to our show, you've probably been subjected to these movies and our love of them. But if somehow you didn't know what F9 meant, then A,
yes.
Their marketing is failing.
No, I think that's the actual title of them.
No, that's what I mean.
But that is the title of the movie.
Yeah,
it's
F9.
Not an abbreviation. F9
no,
is what this
it
movie
is called. That. That's on
like,
their
you
marketing.
You sunk my battleship.
Alonso, it was an advanced screening. I didn't somehow miss
yes.
a memo. Okay, good. Phew.
Yeah, no. It's opening this week in like China and Hong Kong and a few other places,
okay.
Which is why the trade reviews had to go out. But it's not opening in the States until like late June.
Yeah,
so
I think
I already have my
AMC Dolby ticket for that. Because I'm
nice.
A big Fasty too, and I'm really glad I'm in, you know, good company for that. I was part of the Fast franchise for many, many years. And then a couple years ago, me and a group of friends went and every week got together and watched all of them in order. And I'm personally shocked that no one warned me that the continuity in the cinematic universe within the Fast and the Furious franchise is as intense, if not more intense, than Star Wars.
Yes, it's a soap opera.
Wild.
When you find out that 3 actually takes place after 6, yeah, it gets very intense.
Oh yeah, that forget the timeline alone.
But anyway, yeah. So I got to see that this week, and it was great. Like I went to 2 movies on Monday, that and A Quiet Place Part 2 both screened, and it was my first time back in a movie theater. It was my first time getting to hug a lot of my colleagues, like my Breakfast All Day co-hosts were at the first one. So like there was a lot happening. But yes, getting to see F9 on the big screen kind of felt like the official end for me of the pandemic.
I, as you know, I drove up to Northern California to visit my parents.
Yes.
Last week, the Clarks are vaccinated, and I was determined to use that to hug them. since it had been, you know, a year and a half, basically. But we went to a movie while I was there. So my one of the ones that I actually might have answered for this, I went to see Nomadland with my parents. And getting to see that, I've seen it a few times on my little laptop, you know, just like Chloe Zhao wanted me to. And then being able to see it on a big screen and just forgetting the enormity of being in a theater, of how that, like, it changes the experience. There's a reason, like, at festivals, we're always coaching the filmmakers, like, when you're giving things to distributors or to press, like, try and get them into the screening as much as possible, because it's just a different experience, even in a pretty empty theater, like the one I saw.
Especially for, like, comedies and horror movies. That I really miss.
Well, I was just going to say, Alonzo, you just planted a seed, and it is now my dream in life. I want to see Barb and Star go to Vista Del Mar in a packed theater, which I say right now and it gives me like spine tingles, like ooh. But like the idea of that many people coasting on those jokes, and like that, like when you leave a movie feeling like euphoric.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not to bring up something that I know is going to make us all sad, but when the Cinerama Dome reopens and we are all basking in herd immunity or some form of, and Barb and Star is playing on the big screen, I mean, I'll renew my vows. That's what I'll do.
There we go.
Yes. You guys, I love that movie with all of my fart. Like, it's the best.
It was so good. The movie that I'm looking forward to, I mean, obviously I'm looking forward to F9, but the movie that I have a ticket for next week that I'm very excited, and I have seen a couple movies. I restarted my AMC A-list, so my husband and I, we went to go see Nobody, which was amazing Bob Odenkirk action movie. So that was our first one. And then we saw Wrath of Man after that. So a very different experience. But next week, what I feel is going to usher, you know, the summer movies and more, you know, new movies coming to the theaters, Cruella. I'm excited for Cruella.
Oh!
Sorry, not sorry. I don't care. Isn't it the same director as I, Tonya? I'm going to enjoy the shit out of it, basically.
Oh, really? Yeah. All right. Well, thank you to everyone who submitted a question, especially the very warm-hearted one we got today. The number for the hotline, if you have something, is 979-803-1664. Again, 979-803-1664. Please leave us a fun question. We would love to answer it. You could also send it via email. You can write to us at ifidreaalonso@maximumfun.org. Alonso with an S.
Yes.
All right. Now it is time for staff picks. Any movie at all in all of creation. Alonso, why don't you start?
Well, I want to bang the gong a bit for a new movie that I worry is going to slip off of people's radars. But I think you will be really delighted if you see this movie. It's called Riders of Justice. It is a Danish film starring the great Mads Mikkelsen. And it is a movie that changes tone like nothing I've seen lately. It is intense, and then it's funny, and then it's dramatic, and then it's darkly funny, and it just like jumps around the board in a way that you will not expect and will not be able to predict. But it basically, it's a movie about the random chaos of the universe and how when there's a train accident that kills the wife of a military man played by Mikkelsen, his teenage daughter who's on the train with the mother survives. These guys who do algorithms for a living come to the conclusion that the train accident couldn't possibly be an accident. So they try and hook up with Mikkelsen to like seek revenge. But it's also about Mikkelsen's relationship with his daughter. It's also about a male sex trafficked Ukrainian sex worker who they rescue from gangsters, and he sort of like winds up taking care of everybody. It's about the weird relationship between these three algorithm guys who were all like odd in their own way, but form this family with Mikkelsen and his daughter. It's about a lot of things. It's a really hard movie to explain, and really the less you know going in, the better, but it's a delight. Riders of Justice. It's going to be streaming and in theaters this Friday, May 21st.
Oh my gosh. You threw like four loops on that one. I was like, yep, got it, got it. Oh, Ukrainian what? Yeah, that was a treat. All right. Julia, how about you? What kind of staff pick do you got?
I have a grab bag, if that's okay. I'm not going to do the full synopsis for each, but
sure,
you guys have already talked about Shiva Baby on here.
I think that was, it might have been someone's, but Shiva someone's Baby. Pick, yeah.
Shiva Baby was good. And then I would like to add, I swear I watch different kinds of movies, but Trolls World Tour fucking just blew my brain in half. We watched it after the Oscars, me and my group chat. And at first I was like, yeah, whatever, Trolls World Tour. I hadn't seen the first Trolls. DreamWorks, hit or miss. I used to work for them, so I know where all the bodies are buried. But Trolls World Tour fucking slaps, you guys. It's got my man Sam Rockwell in it. It's got Rachel Bloom as this really amazing villain in it. The jokes in there are top-notch jokes. They get really weird, which is, I think, you know, a benefit of it being DreamWorks, then Disney, then the big guys, because they can kind of be off-kilter in that way, which they've done with Shrek to great effect. But there are some weird moments in this. Ron Funches is an amazing voice in it. All the music is really good. So yeah, Trolls World Tour. That's also one that I wish I had seen in theaters, which it's actually getting a small release now. But it's always like at 3 p.m. on a Tuesday or something.
Right. That was one of the first ones that they dumped straight into streaming. Yeah. And everybody's like, what? Not Trolls World Tour. What are you doing?
I rolled my eyes at Trolls World Tour. I was wrong. And then
also, that's a very... No, I was just going to say... Iffy may not be here, but that pick was very iffy in spirit.
Good.
So it's good.
That's why it keeps
keeps it in the family.
Yeah. If I'm not biting my lip once during staff picks, you know, we're not doing it right.
And then most recently, my husband and I just watched Kelly Oxford's Pink Skies Ahead on MTV.
Ooh, good one.
And yeah, I really enjoyed it and I really enjoy her. So, you know, I follow her on Instagram and was kind of, you know, following the pandemic, you know, tragedy of it being eclipsed by everything closing down, and it was supposed to premiere at South by Southwest, and then finally it got this distributor. So I was really happy to see that it was finally available, and it was delightful, and I thought she did a really great job. So yeah,
great Henry Winkler supporting performance.
Oh my god, it was incredible. I mean, I want him to play a pediatrician forever. It's amazing.
That was a solid grab bag, by the way, Julia.
Oh, thank you. Sure. Try to hit all the different corners.
You did. Mine. You guys, you got to watch some Charles Grodin movies. I rewatched The Heartbreak Kid recently for my Minnesota draft that I did on Screen Drafts, and it is brilliant. Elaine May's ability to get people to be so deliciously awkward and in your face with personality is like amazing. But I also strangely in the last few months rewatched The Great Muppet Caper, and the joy that movie brings to me, it is flawless. The fourth wall breaking is perfection. Charles Grodin is perfect in it. There's an entire like Busby Berkeley underwater dance thing with Miss Piggy. Just watch, please. Please watch any Charles Grodin I'll take, but those two would be top of my list. So, Julia, thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you so much for having me.
It was so good to have you
in
for this.
What a treat.
Is there anything you want to plug?
Yes.
Yes. Hit us.
Watch The Simpsons. No. listen
maybe
to
you've
Round.
Heard of it.
Maybe you've heard of it. Listen to Round Springfield when it comes back on your podcast feed. In fact, if you're not already subscribed, what are you doing? Subscribe to Round Springfield on wherever you get podcasts, so that when we do have those new episodes that come through, and they're going to be banger episodes, they'll just be immediately in your feed. So go and do that. And then you brought up Muppets, which this isn't a plug for me personally, but I want everyone to see it. This past week, the Muppets released a pro-vaccination video featuring Gonzo and Pepe the prawn.
Nice.
And it was it was great. I like shrieked when I saw it, because, you know, listen, it's hard times out there. There's still a pandemic going on. I don't know if people know. To have a huge corporation like that just go, Get your shit together, everybody. You don't believe me? Well, listen to these two Muppets. It just was really heartwarming and amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, so I want everyone to watch it. I've already watched it like 12 times. I just love the Muppets so much. So.
And while you're waiting for the new Round Springfields to drop, you can go back and listen to the episode I did where we talked about the pilot. If you want to like listen to their episodes in show order, I talked about the very first Simpsons with them. And that was
nice.
You were a great guest. Thanks so much for doing that.
Well, I would listen. So if I'm going to do it, everybody else might as well. sending out the thank yous as well to everybody who became a member or upgraded during Max Fun Drive. Woo! We just finished. It was so nice to hear from people during that. Everyone who submitted a name to our naming contest, we thank you.
Yes.
There were some really fun ones in there. We will be announcing the winner in a few weeks, so hold on to your butts for that. Mm-hmm. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at Iffy Drea Alonso. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/group/ Iffy Drea Alonso, or you can send us an email at iffydreaalonso@maximumfun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.